The stock market has had a lot of fluctuation in the last few months, and you may be concerned about your investments. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today will be talking about how you and I should be reacting to market volatility. Frank Armstrong back with us once again. Always great to have Frank come by. He's a certified financial planner, founder, and president of the company Investors Solutions, Inc. He's the author of The Informed Investor and co-author of Save Your Retirement. So, are you feeling nervous about your retirement account? What questions do you have about investing? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Frank Armstrong, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Always a joy, Larry. Thanks.
Oh, well, I tell you what, this partial government shutdown is affecting all kinds of things. What's happening with the market?
Well, the market's got a lot of things that they're worried about, but the government shutdown is unambiguously bad for the economy as a whole, and many very valuable functions of the government are either paralyzed or severely compromised. And just one example, if you're making an instrument approach to Chicago O'Hare, you'd probably like the approach controller to have your full attention. That guy's playing four-dimensional chess, and the pieces are moving around constantly. It's extremely stressful, and you don't want him worried about whether he's going to get evicted because he can't pay his rent this month, or if he's overtired because he was driving Uber last night in order to buy groceries. And there's just so many things that the government does that people don't give it credit for. They work away tirelessly to do things that you have no idea. And when they stop, there's a ricochet around the economy that's not good. But in a longer, a wider perspective, the stock market gets priced by people's expectations of future profits and how much risk they'd like to take to get those profits. And a billion of your closest friends are recalibrating both those things every second of the day. And when uncertainty arrives about a number of different issues, like the government shutdown or the trillion-dollar deficit or the slowing Chinese economy, it ripples through the stock market. It goes up and down. That's what stock markets do. You really shouldn't be too concerned about that. Stock markets have got to go up and down. And, for me personally, if the markets fell by two-thirds, I'd still be better off than if I had put all my money in so-called safe investments. Because you get the growth that by assuming the market risk that you're entitled to over long periods of time. The short periods of time will make you nuts. Long periods of time will make you rich.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to deal with. I have a 529 account for my daughter, and she's a sophomore now in high school, and that has done very well over time. But now I'm looking at 2 years from now, I'm going to need to draw on that money. And so it makes me a little nervous when in the short run, and I'm speaking of 2 years here, I don't want to lose all, a lot of the gains that I've made. And there's probably other people in that same boat.
But a lot of accounts act like target date funds, where as you approach a particular date, they become less and less risky so that the fluctuations don't matter as much or at all. You have those options in many of retirement accounts and state education funds, and that should take a lot of the angst out of the investment decision for you.
Give a call if you have a question about investing or about the current situation in the market. I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And as you say, it's not the shutdown that has caused fluctuation. China market slowing is certainly, but what, talk about some of the other areas where there is some.
Well, China has been a key factor in global growth, and when they slow down, not only do they have internal problems in China, but it impacts everybody around the globe who produces raw materials for them or buys their products or whatever. It just ricochets. But, you know, we've got this $1 trillion annual federal deficit. That's someday got to be repaid. And you normally don't see huge deficits during times when the economy is in such great shape. And the underlying reality here, in spite of all this uncertainty, is that it don't get no better than this economically. We've got employment that's record high, unemployment record low, the highest consumer confidence over Christmas that we've seen in years, the greatest pre-Christmas sales that we've seen in years, very strong. I mean, all the economic indicators are very, very good. But the uncertainty that's been introduced for half a dozen different things are just making individual investors and computers that are designed to factor that stuff in, they react and perhaps they overreact. But for every seller, remember, there's a guy on the other side that says, wow, this is a great price. I want to take care of that. Maybe next year I won't be happy, but 5 years from now I'll probably be gloriously happy I bought today.
What about, let's talk about a younger person, somebody looking to maybe get involved in investing in the market. What's your advice to them?
Well, my advice is to go get one of the index funds or exchange-traded funds that buy the world market and just keep buying it without regard to whether it's going up or down. Because if you're younger, say you're 30, you got 35 years for this stuff to work itself out before you want to look at it to retire. Now, you know, of course, if you've got a shorter-term goal, like you want to buy a house in 2 years, then or you're, as you just pointed out, if you're one of your dependents is going to college, well, then perhaps all that ought not to be in the market. But for longer-term goals, the biggest risk you have is not being in the market and or trying to time the market, because you're highly unlikely to do well timing the market. And if you miss out on the opportunities for growth that the market gives you, there's no way to make that up.
If, as we look at investing, there are funds where you can, let's say, buy the U.S. market and then funds where you can buy the world market. Is there advantages to either one?
You know, better diversification is always better. you know, the gold standard is global diversification. And that in theory and in practice, that gives you the highest return per unit of risk that you're willing to accept. And you can do this at such extraordinarily low cost. I mean, when I started the business, it would cost you 5 or 7% to buy a fund, and then you'd have 1 or 2% annual cost. Today, there are no load, no 12B1 fees, and those continuing commission fees, and it costs you maybe 10 basis points, which is 0.1% per year to operate a fund that owns several hundred or 1,000 different firms around the world.
Sounds like a pretty good deal.
It's a tremendous deal. I could never have dreamed of this when I started. And we have to thank Jack Bogle, who just died last week. He's one of my real heroes, and I was fortunate to come across him several times in my travels. A fine, fine gentleman. We argued in a friendly way about various fine points of financial economics, but a man of unquestioned integrity and kindness and just a super gentleman. And he's perhaps more than anybody else on the planet responsible for driving the price of investment goods for retail investors down and making sure that those types of investments serve investors well. Introducing a fiduciary standard to people who had never contemplated that before.
That's pretty interesting, a nice tribute to him. As you look at the various places to go where you can invest your money, what do you look for?
Well, you look for wide diversification and low cost and tax efficiency, and you get those through index funds, and you get them through exchange-traded funds. So there's a number of really great sponsors who put that stuff out. Vanguard comes to mind right away. Schwab has got some great index funds. Fidelity's got some great index funds. State Street and iShares put out some great ETFs, as does Vanguard and the other folks. You want to keep the cost as low as you can. By nature, index funds and ETFs are very tax efficient if you're holding them in your personal account and required to pay taxes on them. And they provide you diversification that's unparalleled.
Tell us a little bit about your company, Investor Solutions.
Well, we're employee-owned. We're down here in Coconut Grove, Florida, which is a village inside the city of Miami. We have a 25-year track record of investing for not only institutions and 401k types, but several hundred investors with $1 to $5 million who just want to make it last forever while they're retired, and younger people who are building up the wealth so that someday they can retire with dignity. We have we're the sole manager for the Nation of the Marshall Islands Social Security Trust Fund way out in the Pacific. And unlike America, they actually have a trust fund. They've actually got money in there for their retirees. And we have an account for the College of the Marshall Islands and several other accounts out there. We have accounts all over the country. I think we have accounts in more than 40 states and several foreign accounts. But the vast majority of what we do is what we call wealth planning for people of reasonable wealth who want to conserve it and make it grow, pass it on to future generations.
Oh. Well, we have some callers online. You can join in, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We're talking today with Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. He's the author of Informed Investor and co-author of Save Your Retirement. We're going to take a quick look at the news, the weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back. So give us a call. We'll get you on right after the news with our guest, Frank Armstrong. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. We're talking about the stock market and investing with our guest today, Frank Armstrong, back with us once again, certified financial planner and founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. Get a couple of books for you to take a look at, too. One's called The Informed Investor. The other he co-authored is titled Save Your Retirement. So, what investment questions do you have? Give a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Frank, we're going to take some calls here. Louis in Dubuque, Iowa has a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Louis. Thank you for calling.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have a loan for $200,000, and I bought a, I sold a lot for $120, and right now I have in my bank $120, and I was wanting to know if that will be, what is the best decision, if I pay in the principal of the mortgage or put some money in the 401.
Okay.
I would like some recommendation if it's possible.
All right, so $120,000 in the bank, Frank, and Louis wondering if he should pay.
Also got a mortgage, which means his situation is pretty highly leveraged.
Should he pay down that mortgage?
Leaving the money in the bank, he's probably going to make less than if he pays than he's paying on the mortgage. You'd have to know many more facts about that, if you're paying more than you're earning, it's a pretty dismal situation. If you had some other opportunities, or you could deleverage yourself, that would be helpful. But again, without knowing all the facts about a specific situation, you just can't sit here and diagnose or prescribe before you diagnose.
And something like that, there could be, well, as you say, there could be options of paying down some, putting some in investments. There's a lot of different ways to look at it.
Right. Well, he mentioned the 401k, and obviously a tax deduction for a tax-deferred growth account in a 401k for over the long haul is a pretty good option. But again, how much he should do that and how much he should pay down or whether he should pay it down, it really boils down to an individual situation and what his objectives are and time horizon and his taste for risk.
Might be worth it for Louis to sit down with a financial planner
because he's got a situation that's probably slightly negative and a lot of opportunities in front of him that would leave him in a better situation.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Louis. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Bonnie in Stoughton. Bonnie, hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
I'm 63. My husband's 68. And I just retired and started to draw last year, right when the market was, tanking. And fortunately for me, I don't have an annuity, so I could just stop drawing, which I did because it kind of was making me nervous for my funds to go down plus drawing.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if he could talk a little bit about like what people my age right now, because we don't have 20 years to get this right. And, I'm pretty diversified, but I never had anything in fixed because I've been in the market for over 30 years, but never fixed. I did move 25% into fixed just because I was getting a little scared and thinking, I really should have had some in there. So I was wondering if you could just talk some about that.
Okay.
Well, sure, buddy. I think that, moving some money into fixed is a very smart idea when you're in the retirement or decumulation mode. Because as we've observed, recently we've had a great lesson in that in December. Markets do go down as well as go up. And in the short term, you don't want to be forced to sell assets that have depreciated in order to meet your income needs. So if you had a pile of very high-quality short-term bonds, fixed-income stuff, you could liquidate that while the market's down and wait for it to recover. We start off with an assumption that perhaps somewhere in the neighborhood of 60% equities and 40% bonds is a mix for someone who's withdrawing an income stream from their net worth. That's pretty reasonable because if you're taking out 4 or say 5% and you've got 40% in
assets that aren't going anywhere, you've got 8 to 10 years for the market to fluctuate around before you even need to think about what happens in the volatile asset classes. And the vast majority of times over 8 or 10 years, the market will have gone on to new highs and you'll be even richer. So it gives you an opportunity on a year-by-year basis to decide which assets you want to liquidate to meet your income needs, and conserve those volatile assets during down markets so that they're there to grow for you in good markets.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
All right. Thank you, Bonnie. Appreciate the call.
It comes down to how many years of fixed income you want to have to make yourself comfortable so you sleep well at night. The more fixed income you have, the less growth opportunities you have, but the lower the volatility of your portfolio. Maybe you sleep better.
Yeah.
And those are sort of individual decisions, Bonnie.
Thanks again, Bonnie. Marilyn and Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Larry. Hi, your guest. I have a question.
Okay.
We have some money that we want to transfer from our checking account into an online bank, into CDs or savings accounts. And I'm wondering, other than checking FDIC and making sure that all of them are guaranteed, I wonder what other things that we should be looking at to make sure that our money is safe.
Yeah.
Well, if they're FDIC guaranteed and you can check that out, then it's going to be safe up to some limit that's way above what you just mentioned. And so now you're looking at where the best interest rates are being offered and how convenient it is for you to get money in and out when and if you need it. You don't want to be taking a big penalty to withdraw it if some emergency comes along or some opportunity. So you might want to build a portfolio of those things so that you can tap into some of it if you need it. But basically, if it's FDIC guaranteed, you can sleep pretty well at night, and the United States government's going to guarantee it.
And so there you go, Marilyn. That's something. And I guess as you were talking, I was thinking about this as you were talking, Frank, there may be certain charges for things or whatever, as you were kind of indicating there, that you kind of want to look at what the practices are for each online bank and go from there.
Right. Well, if there's a penalty for withdrawal, you don't want to lose all the interest that you've accumulated because you need to buy a new car or something. So you could spread it around to five banks, take it and divide it into five. And if you needed a small amount, you could take the one with the smallest penalty.
There you go. Marilyn, thank you. Appreciate it. Ann in Green Bay, we go to you. Hi, Ann.
Hello. I am just wondering, what is a no-load index fund?
What is a no-load index fund?
Okay, well, in the old days, most funds that were sold, most mutual funds that were sold, came with a sales commission tacked on. And that might have been as high as 7.5%. Depending on how much you invested, it might go down to 1% for really large investments. And then along come no-load funds, which are mostly the standard today. You can purchase them through brokerage accounts at places like Schwab or Fidelity or Vanguard. And they have no sales charge tacked on. And that's obviously a big savings for you and a much better situation for almost everybody. I mean, as a rule of thumb, I would never pay a load, and I would never buy a fund that has what's called a 12b1 charge, which is a continuing forever sales charge being given to a guy who wrote the order up, no matter whether or not he gives you any service to justify that. So no load is the way you want to go, true no load. And that puts the maximum amount of your money to work first day, and it keeps the continuing cost down as low as possible.
All right. So the load is really those charges that you were talking about.
Sure. If you put $1,000 in, you might pay $80 or $100 out of that to the salesman, $80, say. And so you've actually only invested $920 or $25, and the salesman goes off and has a party. But you're not benefiting from that unless he's providing some continuing service that justifies it. But typically, you just want to deal with no-load funds, period. End of discussion.
Judy in Fond du Lac, it's your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, now this is assuming I do my homework. It seems that the investment advice given to a normal investor is always keep your money in the market through good times and bad, high and low, and in the end you'll make money. When the exact opposite is true for the people who make real money in the stock market, who trade in and out constantly, and I feel like they're just using my money to make millions while I'm making tens. Can you address that?
You know, the big banks have investment people who may or may not make money, but they put a lot of their money at risk, and they leverage it typically to take even more risk. But for retail investors, people like you and me, people with less than $100 million to put in the game, we really ought not to have leveraged investments, and we ought not to put ourselves at very high risk, and we ought to be looking at lower risk, diversified, low-cost portfolios. But the big banks, they're playing with a different set of rules, and their trading is something that you and I simply cannot do, no matter what kind of great PC we've got sitting in front of us on the desk.
There you go, Judy. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And Walt in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Walt.
Hi, good afternoon. So my concern is about climate change, and considering the ballooning interest and concern about climate change, how can one invest in areas of the economy, you know, the more specific, the better, that will improve our chances on passing on a planet to our children that's not really damaged and do some good?
Well, first of all, there are funds that are so-called sustainable funds, and that means they invest in things that promote sustainability in the planet. And they can be everything from what we will call a zero-carbon fund that's not going to hold anything that produces energy from carbon, down to funds that screen industries that have the lowest possible carbon input. And you can actually do that screening on index funds so that if we're not going to buy a lot of coal mines, we can divert that money into some other area. We're not necessarily investing in things that we would call impact investing. We're trying to make an impact in the world because we're going to invest in new technologies and stuff. We're still investing in the broad market, but we're investing in things that limit the carbon footprint of our portfolio. And you can probably get 80 to 90% reduction in your carbon footprint in your portfolio quite easily by using family of index funds. And depending on how far you want to go, down to zero carbon, et cetera, you can do that, but you are now screening more and more and more things out of your portfolio and getting less diversified. And you can do the same thing with what we call socially responsible funds, where index funds have gone to somebody like the Roman Catholic Church and said, here's what principles would we use to avoid pornography, to avoid munitions, to avoid this and that and that. And then they simply screen those things out but those funds would appeal to the vast majority, I believe, of the Christian Jewish faith,
and you know, without much controversy. If you slice and dice it too far, just like with the sustainable funds, you get into how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Do I want to avoid Coca-Cola because they might have a vending machine on a military installation? And it gets to be ridiculous. But in broad general terms, you can do a lot with socially responsible funds or sustainable funds for a very low cost these days. And 10 years ago, I would not have said that. The cost of doing it was very high, but now it's very small compared to the total cost of running the portfolio. And it's a lot of things that people want to invest according to their conscience and according to their, their better angels. And they now have avenues to do that that don't compromise the investment returns.
There you go, Walt. Thank you so much for calling. Mike in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great, appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm curious in the pros and cons of the differences between mutual fund, index mutual funds, and indexed annuity.
An index fund is a straight fund. An indexed annuity is something that I'm probably one of the biggest opponents, critics of an indexed annuity on the planet. The internal costs are so high and the complexity so much that a full schoolhouse full of Philadelphia lawyers can't figure it out. And typically the guys who sell them can't figure it out. All they know is they pay about the highest commissions of any product they can sell. But they're unambiguously bad. For instance, one of the things that people don't understand is that 2 or 3% of most indexes returns come from dividends, and yet almost all index annuities I've ever seen don't give you credit for the dividends. So if the index makes 6%, you make 4 right off the bat, and then they have buffers on the way up so that if the index exceeds a certain amount, they're only going to give you another certain amount. So let's say that the maximum upside you could get is 10%, but if the index goes up 20%, you get 10, and then it resets. It's just a game that's rigged against you. I've written several articles about it, about just how horrible a deal it is for investors.
There you go, Mike. Thank you. Dave in Spooner emailed to say he's 63, retired, lives comfortably on Social Security and his pension. He will soon have the proceeds from the sale of a second home. Savings account rates aren't very good. Do you have any secure, reasonable investment suggestions?
Well, secure means, if he means secure means zero risk, no. If he means he'd like to take a measured amount of risk, he could divide his portfolio, as we discussed for other retirees, into a segment that's going to grow and a segment that's going to let him sleep well at night. And where he reaches that balance is a personal decision. But if he puts it all in the bank, he's almost guaranteed that the value won't go down, but it'll never go up in real terms. He'll probably end up paying taxes on less than the inflation rate. So little by little, the value of his account, even though it doesn't go down in terms of number of dollars, gets whittled away by inflation.
Mike in Lake Mills, he knows that FDIC deposits are secured, but how long does it take to get reimbursed if the institution does fail? If you depend on those CDs for liquidity, that's crucial.
Well, again, in the worst case, and the institution fails, it may be purchased by another entity, in which case life would go on without too much interruption, or you may have to let the government sort it out, in which case it may be a few months. But if you're concerned about that, the way to do it is to take your fortune and divide it into five slices and give it to five different banks. And if one of them should fail, which is highly unusual, then the other four should be going on, you know, uninterrupted while the government sorts out the one that failed.
So we're pretty good in that area. I don't think there's not a lot to be concerned of.
I don't think I look. I sleep really well at night knowing it's FDIC insured. I mean, short of nuclear war, you know, I just don't see anything bad happening to the banking system that the FDIC wouldn't cover.
Well, Frank, it's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again. I'd love to have you.
Well, anytime, you know, I love these discussions. I love answering your listeners' questions. We get a lot of great questions, and it's just fun. So let's do it again.
All right. Thanks, Frank. Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. Take a look at the website. They have a lot of information about investing on that site. He has a couple of books. The Informed Investor is one. He co-authored Save Your Retirement. So he'll be back. We'll talk with him again. Growing and caring for orchards and other tropical plants will be the topic tomorrow on Garden Talk. So I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots in store.